Happy New Year, Origin Podcast listeners. Prashant here. Today, I'm speaking with Lauren Farley, the co-founder and CEO of Dote. Dote is a mobile mall where shoppers can easily buy items directly from retailers and is backed by VCs such as Lightspeed and Harrison Metal. Lauren and I are going to talk about her background, why she started Dote, how she manages all three sides of her marketplace business, metrics, investors, diversity in startups, and much more. Hope you enjoy. Hi, Lauren. Good afternoon.
Hey, Prashant. How's it going?
Going well. How are you?
Good.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you spending the time with us on the Origin Ventures podcast. And I know all our listeners are curious about what you're building and who you are. So if you want to give us a quick background about yourself and what you're working on, I think that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. Happy to give you that background. So I grew up in Anchorage, Alaska, so didn't have access to very many stores or malls. Was a really early catalog shopper and e-commerce shopper. So having the access to any store was a really compelling idea for me. My first job after consulting at Bain, which is where we got to know each other, was in mobile gaming. So worked at Pocket Gems, which was a really early leader in the mobile gaming space, still a big leader in the mobile gaming space. So got to kind of watch that market move from being desktop-based to mobile and create really big businesses on the phone. I knew the same thing was going to happen with shopping, but didn't see anything out there that was, you know, a truly mobile-native experience. So initially just started Dote on the side as a side project, and then left my day job the day I submitted it to the App Store, and here we are. So what is Dote? I think the two big trends that we see in the market that are really have made Dote possible and that we're kind of building off of is one, just that Gen Z is fundamentally shopping really differently than, you know, prior generations. You and I might remember, you know, going to the mall with our friends or flipping through kind of our favorite catalogs. But today, you know, teens and young adults are really the first digitally native generation. Their favorite, you know, Instagram stars, YouTube stars are their celebrities, just like, you know, Britney Spears was everything to us. And they're the ones that are really influencing their purchase. And I think like so much of their content that they have amassed kind of all of these millions and millions of followers is shopping related content. It's, you know, get ready with me, haul videos, makeup tutorials. I'm sure this is what you spend your free time watching, but it's definitely what I spend my free time watching. But I think then the second trend is that, you know, these kids are on their phone kind of all the time. They're being able to do everything from their phone, and they don't want, you know, 20 different apps for every single store that they want to shop at. And this class of retailers really doesn't want to put their stuff on an Amazon because it degrades their brand. But really needs distribution on the phone. So we're able to offer that to them where, you know, we're using techniques that are really organic, incorporating kind of these social stars that are so important to Gen Z's purchasing decisions, and, you know, allowing them to access our user base and really drive conversions.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thesis, kind of the democratization of celebrities or these micro influencers, especially in the social world or pop culture. Mm-hmm. You know, that is, I would say, one of the major trends that we're seeing now as investors. And it was actually one of the major theses behind our investment in Cameo, which is also a Lightspeed investment, where there's just this long tail of celebrities where in aggregate, they actually have huge influence and power over consumer behavior and attention, and of course, shopping and commerce is one major aspect of that. So I do want to come back to that, but I want to ask about something you mentioned at the top of your intro, which is that you started Dote while you were at another full-time job. And that is something that I know is relatively common in Silicon Valley. It's probably common across the country and the world. But how did you balance that, and how did you think about taking away focus from your main job, which you're obviously an ambitious, motivated person, you want to do well there. How do you balance those two things at the same time?
Yeah, well, it was only over, you know, a couple month period where I was, you know, balancing it. And I think the way I would describe it is this idea, once it kind of popped into my head about what DOTE could be, it was like a magnet. Like I couldn't stop thinking about it. It was like walking down the street, in the shower, you know, every time I had a free second, my mind was just going straight to this idea. And that I think is what motivated me to, you know, get up super early. You know, before I came into work, I'd be working on DOTE. When I got home, I'd be working on DOTE. And just really see where I could take it. And I think like, even though by the time I left my job, I was like, it was a really terrible version that I'd submitted to the App Store, like would be mortified if anyone saw it today. But you know, it was something, and it was still the biggest, I mean, it was the scariest decision of my whole life to date, was saying, you know, I'm going to leave my job, even though I think, you know, in this culture, to your point, what was the worst that could happen? It was all upside, no downside, really.
Makes sense. And you talked a little bit about how your interest and your passion and your background prepared you to kind of be the CEO and the leader for DOTE. Do you think that some of the skills that you picked up from consulting or Pocket Gems, you know, help you be a CEO of a venture-backed startup like DOTE?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's funny. It's like that Steve Jobs quote where you can't connect the dots going forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. But I definitely feel that way, where it's like every kind of experience, you know, prepared me for this role. I think, you know, first and foremost was sort of the unique upbringing in Alaska that I think contributed to my perspective, saying, you know, I know there's an enormous market for this type of company. And then I think consulting, I mean, Bain, I think, is just like the best first job you can possibly have, especially I was a liberal arts, you know, major. So I literally had no idea what the business world was about and needed that, you know, professional potty training that Bain offers. Yeah. And still today, I mean, we, you know, hire folks right out of consulting, love people with that background. And you know, two of our board members are former Bain, or one's Bain, one's McKinsey. Jeremy's McKinsey from Lightspeed, and during you know, was his first job was at Bain. So I think that just prepares you so well to, you know, take kind of this unstructured mess of a startup and put structure on it, break down the problems, just the discipline really of, you know, having the small things, but like a great, you know, operating model, or having agendas for all of your meetings and kind of all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then for sure, Pocket Gems, like so lucky to kind of move into that. Initially I was an APM there and then became a PM. And I think when I joined, I like didn't even know what a product manager did, which is crazy. But certainly I think, you know, the upside of games is the pace of shipping so, so fast.
Yes.
Because you're just like, it's kind of, you know, you're waiting for it to die. So you're just trying to, you know, pump as much converting features until that happens. And so I think you just really learn to be data driven and highly iterative and just making great consumer products. I think that a lot of great mobile products are entertainment at the end of the day. And I don't think DOTE is any different. And certainly a lot of those gaming mechanics, or just kind of thinking about building an entertaining mobile product, is super relevant to DOTE.
Yeah. I, you know, one thing I've heard about the mobile gaming space is you have to be obsessed with the metrics, right? And this is in real time. You might push something and you're watching the A/B and the performance, right? How is that translated over into your work at DOTE, which I assume you've brought over some of that data-driven obsession to what you're building at DOTE?
Yeah, we brought both kind of the data-driven obsession and then also just a lot of straight mechanics. Sometimes I tell people that, you know, a lot of our team came from mobile gaming and they go, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. I saw this mechanic in DOTE. I saw this mechanic in DOTE. So some things are like direct applications, but certainly on the data side. I mean, I think when you are running a game that has as much scale as, you know, those Pocket Gems games had. I mean, I ran the, you know, number one grossing app in the App Store in 2011, like huge games. And you just are so disciplined about those numbers, like even something as small as onboarding, where, you know, every additional step you're seeing, call it, you know, a 3%, 5% drop off. You have to really believe in the value of each of those steps, because you're talking about millions and millions of dollars that, you know, you're losing if you put that step in. So one small example that I think is similar is in our checkout flow. Once you enter your zip code, we populate your city and state.
Yep.
And you can change them if there's something weird and it doesn't work. But it's amazing to me how I just would never take that step for granted. Like if you could make it even just a little bit easier, especially on mobile for your users, you should do it, because all that stuff adds up.
I totally agree. And it's funny you bring up that example, because it annoys me so much when e-commerce, it's city and state after you put in your zip. I'm like, you already know it.
Oh, you know, it's so ridiculous.
That's a funny example. So, you know, on the topic of metrics, what are the most important or the most important metric in your business today? And has that, you know, changed over time as you've been building and scaling?
Yeah, I would say it has a little bit. I mean, we definitely track to gross merchandise sales the most. So we have, you know, obviously our gross merchandise sales targets that we're, we break down in terms of, you know, conversion, AOV, new users contribution, you know, returning user contribution. So retention, of course, is really important as well. And then we also look at a lot of funnels. So not just the onboarding funnel, but just thinking about, okay, how many times does she come back in a month? When she comes back, how many items does she view? Mm-hmm. How many items that she views does she go into, you know, a deeper screen to learn more, add to bag to purchase, kind of that whole funnel, so we can really understand when behavior is changing and why. We are still, you know, primarily focused on growth. So we really try to think about what are the best items we can show her that she's most likely to convert on versus, you know, any other kind of factors. But yeah, those, I think, just like the discipline of kind of those funnels and saying, okay, you know, we're shipping a feature that we think is going to move sessions per month. And if it moves session per month, great. But did that actually translate to moving items viewed, you know, add to bags, bag conversion, et cetera.
Yeah. Makes sense. I want to, you know, I'm curious about how you manage all the different pieces of your business model, right? You obviously have the actual retailers and the brands who are selling their products. You have the consumers, all of the people using your app and your platform. And then you also have these celebrities or micro influencers. You know, there's a lot of different dynamics at play here. And, you know, what are the difficulties and challenges in managing all these different sides of your business?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we really are a three-sided marketplace.
Yeah.
And I think kind of like, God, I forget the word for it, but Uber's, what's it called? Pickup time was like their kind of the metric that people really cared about.
Yep.
We really try to think about, okay, what are the things, especially for our stage of the company, that we really, really need to nail that actually kind of drive the rest. So for us, I mean, the retailer partnerships and kind of the commission that we take, that isn't, I mean, it's pretty, like retailers love us because mm-hmm. we're driving, you know, a unique experience and conversion with creators. So I would say that that one isn't kind of the hardest one. I think that, you know, the creators and what we found, we call, our, what you would call influencers, creators, mm-hmm. Creators are just really important. You know, if you can get the creators engaged, if you can get them creating content, people want to see that. And that will drive a lot of your new user acquisition and a lot of your engagement once you're on the platform in terms of, you know, coming back, but also in terms of purchases. So we really invest a lot in kind of the health of that part of the marketplace, just because we found that that one tends to drive the other two. Not directly necessarily, but indirectly.
Yeah. What are some examples of things that you use to keep engagement higher, get the creators or talent side motivated?
Yeah. So, you know, we actually have a Drake equation. Do you know what a Drake equation is?
You should explain.
Okay. This is like a classic, Michael Deering on his website has a great video about this, but Essentially, I think the origin of the Drake equation was this guy was trying to calculate like if aliens exist and what the probability of aliens existing is. And he kind of drew the equation of like how many planets are there, how many galaxies, like, et cetera, to kind of get to a probability. Mm-hmm. So what we like to do is we like to break down kind of anything like this into, you know, what are the driving components, and then kind of figure out how we can, you know, drive each of those pieces. So for creators, we really think about, okay, what are they motivated by? What are the components that would get them excited to, work with DOT or promote DOT, and sort of break down those things. And I think, you know, money, of course, is a motivator, but there's lots that are beyond money, you know, validation, love from their audience, ways to engage their audience, content. You know, these people are on kind of a content treadmill. They have to continuously ship new content to their users. So thinking about how we can, you know, deliver on that. Is important. I think just listening to them. I mean, you know, we have established such great relationships with these creators that you can kind of really understand what they're motivated by. And, you know, I think any product, that's really what it comes down to is, you know, what will motivate them to do the behavior that, you know, you want to see.
Makes sense. You know, one of the most important jobs, maybe the most important job that you have as the CEO, is hiring and building out your team, right? And getting them ready to scale as you guys continue to have success. So I'm curious what the most important thing is that you look for in hiring and building out your team.
Yeah, it is the most important thing. I think everyone says this, but the number one thing is, we don't call it culture fit. We call it culture driver. And what it means is it's not enough if they're, you know, going to fit into the culture here. They have to be actively driving the culture forward. Mm-hmm. So we have kind of three questions that we ask ourselves about, is this person a culture driver? One is, you know, do they raise the bar for what it means to be excellent in at least one domain? The second is the room always better because they're in it? And then the third is, are they someone that would make you excited to wake up and come to work in the morning to see? And so I think like everyone talks about it, but I think just like never, ever compromising on that, and really being able to walk the walk and, let go of people who don't meet that, is a really important part of it, because you're never going to get it right 100% of the time. But you know, you have to, it's just so, so critical, but it's hard, you know, especially in this market. It's like hiring is insane right now. Especially for technical talent. But I think you just really can't compromise on those things, because it just can't work. And it's like, life's too short, you know, like I don't want to build a company that I don't want to come work at every day. So
makes sense. And you touched on this a little bit, but you know, what kind of culture do you try to cultivate at DOT? And I'm sure this started early on, but I'm also curious about how you think the culture impacts the product, because that's one thing I've heard at small companies too. Mm-hmm. Like the product and the culture have to have a fit. Otherwise, it's not going to work.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I think, I will say, like, I thought that we made kind of our cultural values when we were probably 10 people. And I thought that we were like too early to do it, but decided to do, you know, to make the investment and do it. But I wish we had done it sooner, you know, and I wonder if you hear other entrepreneurs say that. But as soon as we sort of like codified what it meant to, you know, what our culture was and what our values were. And I think, you know, being at Bain, where, you know, those operating values that we had were, I think, best in class, and really, you know, people referred to them. They were able to really guide behavior. They weren't just like high level kind of words like, you know, kindness or something, was a great kind of reference point. But I would encourage any entrepreneur to do it when you have like four people, like right away, because I think it just really helps you kind of talk about it and have the language. I'm obsessed with our values. We have, 7, and they're all sort of unique enough that people refer to them and they know, you know, kind of what, we're talking about. So some of my favorites are, level up, which is a little bit of a nod to our gaming days, but is really the growth mindset, you know, continuous learning, always focus on how you can be better. Mm-hmm. Another one that's probably everyone's favorite is Heart of a Champion. We call it HOC for short. And Heart of a Champion means like rising to the occasion. You know, it's when you do the thing that, you know, needs to be done without asking for thanks, just because you know it needs to be done, you know, even if no one's going to find out about it. And that one is just so powerful. Like HOC, HOC is like chanted around here. It's such a good one.
That's so cool.
Know it when you see it. People be like, oh my God, you had to do that? Like HOC, man. which is really, really good.
That's awesome. And, you know, reading a little bit about you and DOTE, I also came across some stuff around AllRaise and the female founders office hours that I think you're involved with. And of course, there's a lot of organizations that are focused on diversity and technology, both in the Bay Area and nationally, I think, because people recognize that there's a lack of diversity, that that can lead to worse outcomes and worse decision-making. And of course, we see the negatives, the worst negatives of that in some of the scandals around harassment and things like that. So, you know, I'm curious about your involvement in those organizations and, you know, what you're bringing to them and what drives you and where your passion comes from, but also if you can feel the difference that those kinds of organizations are making in Silicon Valley and more broadly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think AllRaise and, you know, the female founder office hours is fantastic. It's a way to, you know, give a network where, you know, a network, you know, historically hasn't existed or hasn't been as strong. And I think that those are super powerful in terms of, you know, making a difference down the line. I mean, I think like it's certainly trending in the right direction. And obviously the last couple of years have made just huge, huge strides, I think, in, you know, moving in the right direction, or at least awareness about kind of the perception of female founders and, you know, not being able to raise as easily and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think we've been really fortunate to find partners, you know, in Lightspeed and Harrison Metal who, you know, are just supportive of the business that we're building and kind of full stop. And then I think in terms of our team, we've been really lucky where, you know, we have 50% of our technical team is female. Our team, I think, is like 80% female. So just a really diverse team. And, you know, it's one of those things, like once you start like that, it's compounding. It's, you know, a positive feedback loop. And we really haven't had to try to recruit female engineers, but it just happens. So everyone says this as well, but just the earlier you can, you know, bring that into the team and the culture, I think you're just setting yourself up for success, down the line. And for our product, I mean, the kind of to your point about how does culture inform the product? I think, you know, we do have men that use the product, but it's primarily women.
Yeah.
And, it's just so important to have people who are, you know, super engaged with your product and love it. You know, I think that's what really gets you through the hardest times. And that's what really gives you the unique insights that you need to build something great. So
it's a lot easier to get the voice of the customer if you're actually a customer of the product, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Even stuff like with the creator stuff, I think it's such a good example where, you know, we do a lot of trips with creators and we always laugh because like some of them are teenagers and, you know, we meet the moms, talk about boys with them, like we do the whole thing and it's like so great because we're, you know, we're like big sisters to them. That's and cool. It's really fantastic.
Yeah, that's cool. You talked about some of the difficulties, and we see this in the statistics of, you know, women trying to raise or minorities trying to raise. Is that something that you felt when you were raising money for DOTE?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, raising money should be hard.
Yeah.
it shouldn't be easy. Like this is millions and millions of dollars. It's like pension funds and, you know,
right.
all of your LPs are really important. Institutions. But I think, you know, certainly you can feel when you're, you know, I think from the get-go when you're being treated fairly or not treated fairly. Uh-huh. And of course, like I've certainly felt that way. you know, on both sides of the coin with folks. But I do think that like my strategy has been, you know, when you're starting a company, it is so challenging. Like it takes all of your emotional energy, you know, mental energy, physical energy, literally any type of energy you have. You want to conserve it and focus on the problem that you're solving. And so I think you just, my strategy has been when I felt that way about someone, even if it's just kind of a gut feeling that, hey, you know, I don't feel like they're really treating me super seriously or taking me as seriously as they should, given my background and my team's background. I just move on because I think life's too short and like the energy I would spend trying to change their mind is just not worth it. And there are great actors out there. You know, there's a lot of bad actors, but there are really fantastic, you know, people in the venture community who will treat you really fairly. So my advice would be, you know, call me, call the other people involved in like an all raise and find out who those people are and you know, go after them.
Yeah. And on that note, how have your, you know, investors and board members, you mentioned Michael Deering from Harrison Metal, Jeremy from Lightspeed, how have they been supportive, not just in believing in Dote and believing in you and giving you money, but beyond, well beyond that, right? That's the value that VCs say they want to add, right, to entrepreneurs.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, every single round that we've done, we've always said maximize for the partner, not for, you know, slightly higher valuation or whatever. And I think that's paid off every single time. They are so critical to, you know, every aspect of the business, including recruiting, just high level strategy decisions. So I think that, you know, those two folks are really different people. You know, Jeremy is, you know, first investor in Snapchat, really involved, you know, HQ Trivia, a lot of kind of pop culture sort of media companies. And then, you know, Michael is definitely a different type of investor and really disciplined, super thoughtful about the economics of the business. And so for us, it's just been awesome to have both of them. And they really complement each other in terms of bringing really different perspectives to the table. So I think that's another thing that I would suggest as well is, you know, try to find people who think different from each other even so that you really get a lot of great perspectives around the table.
Yeah. And, you know, I was going to ask you, you know, what advice you would give to people who are trying to raise money. And you sort of gave some tidbits of advice in there, which is choose the right firm or the right partner. Don't try to optimize just for valuation, because that's like mm-hmm. a way that can get you into trouble pretty quickly. And, you know, obviously as a venture investor, when we give that advice, it's a little bit trickier for us to give that advice because people think we have a hidden agenda. But when it comes to an entrepreneur like yourself who has raised money from very well-known investors, I think it carries a lot of weight. And I think it's an important thing for especially younger entrepreneurs to think about because, you know, they may be worried that VCs are all sharks and everyone's out to get them. And there, while some of that is true, I'm not going to pretend.
You know, it is.
I think there are people out there that you mentioned, you know, there are good people that are really trying to be helpful. And obviously they're trying to make money for their limited partners, whoever they may be, but they're also trying to do good in the world and be helpful to the entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the way I look at it is these outcomes are typically binary, especially in consumer companies. Yeah. And if you look at back, you know, 5 years, 10 years in, you're not going to remember that term sheet that was slightly higher. Right. You're going to remember all of the experiences in the really great times, and especially in the really dark times when that partner that, you know, you chose was there for you. So I think for sure that's the most important thing.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, I want to give you a chance to talk. You know, you talked about Dote and what you guys are building, but I'm sure you guys are hiring. Like you mentioned, hiring is very difficult, especially for technical talent. You know, talk about some of the roles, the exciting stuff that people could do if they were to think about joining Dote.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I will take you up on that. Yeah, we are hiring for a lot of roles right now. I think we have 12 or so job requisitions open, most of which are technical, but not all. Certainly iOS will be launching on Android in 2019. Mobile developers for sure, as well as backend developers. Data science is another area that we're hiring for. And I think we have just like a very, very interesting and special data set, because we see, you know, kind of cross category, cross brand. We have a social graph that's layered onto all of this, which is really exciting. And then product roles, of course. And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it that I can think of right
yeah,
now.
But that sounds really exciting. Yeah.
One that we're hiring for, which is really exciting, is we launched our first private label last summer with YouTube star Emma Chamberlain.
Oh, very.
So looking for someone to run kind of that part of the business, which is really successful. So that would be another area that we're looking for someone.
Awesome. Sounds like a bunch of exciting opportunities. And I'm assuming these are all in San Francisco.
All in San Francisco.
All in San Francisco. Awesome. Well, Lauren, I appreciate you taking the time to share your background, the DOTE story, some of what you see happening in Silicon Valley, and your thoughts on investors and VCs. I think it was a really helpful discussion. I learned a lot, and I hope others do as well.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Prashant.